This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 245 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, happy Memorial Day weekend. It was nice to have a week off, but we got to get back to work, don't we?
That's right. It's time. It's time to get back to work.
And we've got a lot of news tonight. We've got Airbus talking about creating a flying taxis. We've got Wisconsin, Texas, and California states are states with the most law enforcement using drones. Another Amazon patent and an FAA news webinar series. And breaking news this morning about recertification for all those commercial drone pilots. A video of the week and feedback. So I guess we should get started. What do you think, Max?
Let's get started.
Well, the first story comes from Bloomberg.com. Airbus steps up push for flying taxis and on-demand helicopters. Airbus is creating a UAM division, or urban air mobility.
This is a good move, and it really signals how serious Airbus is in this space. Now, there are a number of projects that Airbus has been involved in. We'll talk about some of those coming up shortly. But what they've done here is consolidate under one organization, this Urban Air Mobility Organization. It's going to be based in Munich, and as we say, it consolidates all of the UAM activities except for the current air vehicle projects, those that are underway, but they still become coordinated by the UAM unit. And there's kind of three major ones, I think, David. The first one is the City Airbus, and that's an electric vertical takeoff and land demonstrator. It's being developed by Airbus Helicopters. It's an interesting multi-rotor with four-ducted fans, fixed-pitch props, four-passenger capability, initially to be flown with a pilot, but later autonomous when the regulations allow that sort of thing to take place. So that's the City Airbus initiative, and that will be coordinated by this new UAM unit. But there are a couple of other projects that sort of the Airbus entities have been working on.
Yeah, and before we leave the City Airbus, we got to keep in mind that it only will have 15 minutes endurance because it's electric. So I wonder how long it's going to take to charge for that 15 minutes. But the next one is the Vahana, a self-piloted eVTOL single-passenger aircraft developed by A-Cubed. And that's a 2020 production target commuter vehicle. The first full-scale flight, we talked about this, was January 2018 in Pendleton, Oregon, reaching a whole 16 feet or 5 meters over 53 seconds. Again, electric vertical takeoff and landing. Interesting that as a personal aircraft instead of more the air taxi thing. So, and then we've got another A-Cube project.
Right. This is the Voom, V-O-O-M, on-demand helicopter booking platform. As you say, it's another A-Cubed project. That's the Silicon Valley organization that Airbus set up. They characterize that as something that they plan to have launching this summer. That Voom, they say, is partnering with Audi, the German automaker, to deliver what they call a premium end-to-end transportation service. Starting in Sao Paulo and Mexico City. They say this partnership will provide luxury ground transportation serviced by Audi vehicles and helicopter transportation via Voom. And their goal is to provide customers in what they call the world's most congested cities with a seamless and ultra-convenient travel experience. So I think, again, this is a great move for Airbus, pulling all these together under the air or the urban air mobility moniker. And this is where we're going to see some innovation. I think maybe the other aircraft makers might sort of want to take a little bit notice of what Airbus is doing here.
And effective the day we release this, June 1st, 2018, Eduardo Domínguez Huerta, 40, an Airbus veteran, becomes the head of urban air mobility. Huerta was the CEO of the Airbus A3 Innovation Center in Silicon Valley. So they are really moving forward to be part of this game.
They really are, David. And we'll put a link in the show notes to their Autonomous Skies webpage, the Airbus Autonomous Skies webpage, where they say, and this really characterizes, I think, where Airbus is coming from, what their strategy is. They say the future of transport lies in the skies. By developing a range of cutting-edge autonomous technologies, Airbus is working towards a world of self-piloting urban air mobility vehicles, cargo drones, and more autonomous commercial aircraft. The vision: a safer, more efficient, and eco-friendly global transport network. I think Airbus is pretty committed to this.
We might get our flying cars yet. And they also say on the page, and we quote, "Increasing urbanization means the skies above our cities hold the key to fast, efficient travel in the future. I guess we've tried to go underground with subways and tubes, etc. So now the skies are going to be where we're going to be commuting. And you know what? I'm good with that."
Yeah, well, certainly it's space, it's capacity, it's transportation capacity that's fairly underutilized, I guess you could say, at this point in time. But there certainly are a lot of hurdles. We've talked about them. I think everyone who listens to this podcast is aware of the things that have to fall into place before this kind of a vision can be realized. But when you see companies, again, like Airbus committed to this, it really does give you a sense, or at least does to me, a sense that there is a real possibility that this future may actually happen.
Let's hope. There's a lot of people out there, you know, we really do need to make the Flying Taxi podcast, because this is this is getting to be interesting. And so let's move on to, this is from channel3000.com. Wisconsin, Texas, California, states with the most law enforcement agencies with drones. The Bard College Center for Study of the Drone estimates that at least 910 state and local police, sheriff, fire, and emergency services agencies in the U.S. have acquired drones. It sounds like drones are becoming commonplace. Now, we're not talking big drones, but it could be something simple as a quadcopter. But Texas, California, and Wisconsin have the most agencies with drones. Kind of expect Texas and California, but Wisconsin?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. But I tell you, David, if you had asked me before I saw this article to guess at how many law enforcement agencies in the United States were using drones or had drones, I guess that's more precise, I don't think I would have guessed a number that high. That's pretty spectacular. Also, though, as they note, there may be many, many more agencies that are actually using drones but don't own them, because sometimes, and we've seen this, a law enforcement agency will borrow a drone from another agency, or will look for a contractor to provide some drone services. So this study just looks at the law enforcement agencies that actually own their own drones. So again, there may be a lot more that are using them, but it's pretty spectacular. And it's growing, too. This is on an upward trend.
82% this year over last, which is kind of amazing. And there are more than twice as many agencies that own their own drones as there are agencies that own manned aircraft in the U.S. You know, and that highlights something that we've talked about. But, you know, there are major police departments like Philadelphia or New York or Los Angeles or Baltimore that have either fixed wing or rotary aircraft. Your average common run-of-the-mill town doesn't have access to a helicopter, but they can acquire a drone a lot cheaper and provide some of the abilities you would get from either a fixed wing or a helicopter. So it's not surprising that police and fire departments are latching onto this technology because it is democratizing something that a lot of the larger cities and states have, but not the smaller townships.
Hmm. Yeah, and I don't think this means the complete demise of the law enforcement helicopter. I think we'll continue to see those because certainly there are some missions that a small UAS isn't really well suited to, whereas a full-scale manned or maybe unmanned helicopter is more suited. Definitely the availability, like you say, David, the low cost or the low cost to entry, if you will, for these departments, these agencies to acquire a small drone allows a lot of capability, things to be done that just weren't done in the past, even where they could have been done by a helicopter. But like you say, too expensive to operate, too expensive to own. So we have these small drones to thank for that.
Good news about UAVs, which is what we like talking about. Now, evidently, I was away from the desk of our other show the other day, and my co-host got a little defensive about the word patent. We're going to talk about Amazon patenting another patent, and I'm going to spare him, and I'm going to say just because someone patents something doesn't mean that it's actually going to go into effect. That being said, this one's pretty practical on the scale of Amazon patents. You know, there's another show out there, Max, I think is the Amazon. We've got four spinning out of control now. We've got the unmanned air taxi podcast. We've got the This Week in FAA Drone News, and now we've got This Week in Amazon Patents. So Amazon was issued a patent for unmanned aerial vehicle approach notification and by methods on how you know your drone is ringing your doorbell.
Yeah, this is a pretty broad patent, I think, in that it suggests a number of ways in which the delivery drone could communicate with the customer and the customer communicate with the delivery drone. But that includes things such as just simply that the customer receives a status text, perhaps even maybe something that shows the drone on a map. So you can observe how close the drone is to your location, to where the drop-off zone is. It also talks about things like the drone maybe using lights or even speakers to talk to you, to signal its arrival.
Your package has arrived. Your package has arrived. Your package has arrived. Your package has arrived.
Yeah, I better get outside and get it before the dog runs away with it. But there's some other methods in this patent by which the drone could communicate with a customer.
It can maneuver in a pattern to signal its intent, like a figure eight over the drop zone. The drone could use some method like a pointer to indicate that an obstacle has to be moved. I thought that was kind of interesting. It's like, okay, I'm staring at a wall. Somebody needs to move it so I can go around it. or we could talk about good old marshalling signals. Customers could use certain kind of hand signals or other gestures to communicate with the drone. And we talked about this earlier in a patent. So an earlier patent. I kind of like the there's something attractive to me that I get my wands out, go stand in the front yard and pretend that it's a 747 freighter that's coming into my front yard instead of a quadcopter with a small little package. But you got to dream big in this universe.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Now, we'll put a link to the patent in the show notes if you'd like to study that. There's a scenario that's described in this article that we have here by GeekWire that I think is kind of interesting. They say, for example, the drone could announce its arrival with a question such as, is it okay to land here?
Is this landing spot clear for delivery?
That's right. They even propose something like flashing two squares of light onto the ground labeled yes and no. And then the customer would answer the question by walking over to the appropriate spot, indicating to the drone that, yeah, this is a good place to deliver the package. So, as I said, it's pretty broad patent. I mean, it opens up a lot of possibilities. But the big takeaway, I think, here is that Amazon is thinking about the need for the drone to, the package delivery drone, to have some kind of communication with the customer, either to announce that it's arrived, to let you know, the process of making sure that the landing spot, the delivery spot is clear, selecting the delivery spot, all of those kind of things may require some kind of interaction between the customer and the delivery drone. And that's what this patent covers. So yeah, pretty interesting.
And again, it's Amazon taking steps to make things concrete. We're not just talking vaporware anymore. We're talking serious consideration when you start talking about minutia, like how is a drone going to communicate where it wants to land? I mean, these are, we sort of joke about patents, but these are, this means they're actually seriously considering these options to go forward. And that's, it's kind of like Airbus. Amazon is trying to push the envelope and get people thinking. And there's nothing worse. And you, it's kind of cool when you have your name next to a patent. Not that I have one, but maybe when we come up with the automatic editing podcasting service, so my co-host doesn't have to worry about that every week, I'll be able to patent that.
Oh, dear.
So we've got a little bit of FAA news this week. And the first is their new webinar series. And I recommend everybody look at these. And they're going to start June 5th, which is the day after we release this show. And all summer, these webinars will be able to help drone operators maximize their chance of success from when applying for an operational waiver.
Right.
They're free, which is a good thing. And it shows that our FAA wants our people to be successful, give them the tools to be successful, and them doing the right thing makes it easier for the FAA to issue the waivers and minimize the back and forth between the flyer and the regulator.
Right, right. And what they've done here is something I think is pretty clever, which is to take a look at the Part 107 waivers that have been requested, and look at which are the types that are most often requested, and those are the topics for this this webinar series of 8 webinars, and those are daylight operation, meaning really the nighttime or fly at night waiver, operation over people. Operating limitations, those relating to altitude primarily, and visual line of sight operation of unmanned aircraft. So those are the main topics. As I say, there's 8 webinars, well, really 9, although if you consider that the nighttime operations topic is in 2 parts. Registration, it's first come, first serve, and they're limiting it to 1,000 attendees. So if you are contemplating participating in these webinars, and again, they are live, so I think what the FAA is trying to do is get a good dialogue going. But if you are interested, take a look at registration for this. Otherwise, you potentially risk being locked out after the 1,000 participant limit is reached.
And you're going to need Adobe Connect for your smartphone or tablet, but that's, if there's any cost to it at all, I'd be surprised. And eventually there will be audio transcripts. So if you do miss out on the webinar, there will be an audio kind of podcast transcript of it. So that's a good thing. But like I said, the FAA, we've talked about from all the way back from when I went to the seminar in Baltimore, the FAA wanted to partner with the flyers, and all of these, actually, they've issued these kind of exemptions and waivers already to people. So the FAA is basing these on what they've already, what was required for other people to get successful waivers. So they know what they want, and if you follow them and work with them, you'll get what you want, which is the waiver. And the FAA will get one that they can immediately approve and not go back and forth and have hours of paperwork. And again, everybody's trying to eliminate the bureaucracy. So good for the FAA.
Yep.
The next one's kind of breaking news, and my co-host still doesn't have my breaking news music that I've asked for all these years. But this was from interdrone.com. The FAA will require recertification for commercial drone pilots. I guess I'm not surprised. All pilots have to go through recertification. So why should drone pilots be any different? It's just sort of surprising that it's coming up so quickly.
The Part 107 certificate, the remote pilot airman certificate, for commercial drone pilots, that's limited to 24 months, actually, 2 years. So what we see here is some clarification or a description of the process for this kind of recurrent testing for the Part 107 certificate. And the sort of the source document here comes from the FAA. It's remote pilot, small unmanned aircraft systems, airman certification standards. And this is FAA-S-ACS-10A. Previously, we had -10. So what we have here is a description of the process for being retested. And there's some clues here. I haven't really studied this yet, David, but there is some information about the test questions. Interesting that there are no test questions in the recurrent testing for the weather and loading and performance categories, but we see here that most of the test covers regulations and airspace requirements. The report here from InterDrone says that 70 to 80% of the test questions are in those two areas, regulations and airspace requirements, and that the other questions focus on remote operation knowledge, on emergency procedures, and on maintenance of unmanned aircraft.
So, folks, if you want to pass, study regulations and aerospace requirements, because if that's 70% of the test and you get 100% of those right, you've passed the test. Spoken from someone who takes insurance tests on a regular basis. But
oh, joy.
Yeah, the recertification sucks, but necessary. I mean,
sure.
But you know what, Max? You know, I thought about this coming home from work today. This recertification means that there are people coming up on 24 months of having their Type 107.
Hmm.
That's kind of amazing.
Time flies when you're flying drones.
Flying drones.
Jeez.
But think of how far we've come, you know, and I think it's kind of cool that, you know, we've got people who have had Type 107 certifications for almost 2 years now.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, you've got a video of the week for us, David.
Yeah, this is in honor of my friend David, who is going to spend 3 months in Hawaii next year. Hopefully, I will be there for 1 week.
Hmm.
But everybody's talking about Kilauea the volcano that's erupting on Hawaii. So why not some drone footage of it? And this is actually by the U.S. Geological Service, or USGS.gov. And it's pretty self-explanatory. It's drone footage of lava and explosions, and it's just a lot of red and cool and looks like hellfire. And
it does. It pretty looks much, scary.
It pretty much looks very scary, but and we hope the drone survived and didn't melt.
So the video that we have is from the independent.co.uk, but we'll also put a link in the show notes to a site on the USGS website, and it's called Kilauea Volcano Erupts. And not only does it provide a lot of current information about the status of what's going on there, but there are additional videos, some still photographs, not all from drones, of course, but a lot of amazing video to see. I guess if you live in Hawaii or visit Hawaii, David, maybe all that lava spewing up out of the ground is somewhat routine. But for us East Coasters, David, I think lava coming out of the earth, I don't know, that's I would run in the other direction for sure.
It's kind of traumatic, but we'll see. Hopefully, it will have stopped erupting by the time I get there in the spring. And they will have fixed the Arizona, which is also broke, which
yes,
is I'm not looking forward to my trip to Hawaii because the things I've wanted to see most are not happening. So we'll talk about that in the future.
Right.
But we got listener mail, Max. We haven't had listener mail in a long time.
Yeah, the first one, this comes from Chris Janke. He's the assistant professor in the College of Aeronautics at Embry-Riddle, their worldwide campus. And he actually passed this along to us in our Slack listener team. And this is about a survey. Now, this is an important survey that you want to kind of pay attention to this because I think a lot of us are going to want to take this survey. It's the Unmanned Systems Industry Survey. And what they say is the future challenges for and expectations of the workforce in unmanned systems. What are the future challenges for that? And Embry-Riddle Worldwide wants to learn about current market developments and challenges, identify gaps and upcoming needs for graduates and employees in this field. So there's a survey. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, and they're inviting all of us to participate in the survey and also to pass it along to others in this field and like to get as much input as possible. The answers or the results are all anonymized and compiled for later examination, so they're not going to get into the issues of personally identifiable information. Thanks, Chris, for, you know, thinking of us to help spread the word on the survey. Take a look in the show notes, uavdigest.com/245, and you'll see a link to that survey.
Our other one was from our friend Tim Trott, and sound idea, acoustic technology lets small planes listen for nearby aircraft. There's a paper about an acoustic vector sensor, and it's a device mounted on the exterior of small aircraft that listens for the characteristic sounds and indicate the presence of other flyers. It's sonar for airplanes. Called a acoustic vector sensor, or AVS, the system uses nanoscale materials to alert pilots of other aircraft within about 10 kilometers. It's sonar for airplanes.
Well, it's fascinating. It's like a microphone, except that they also take into account the sounds that the airplane on which it's mounted, your vehicle, makes, and subtracts that from, you know, the acoustic sensor reception, so that it's, you know, limited to what other aircraft around it are doing. But this is kind of a different approach to
sense and avoid.
Yeah, very interesting. So there's an article in Scientific American about this, and as David mentioned, there's a actual paper on this topic, and we'll have those in the show notes. But Tim goes on, he talks about another issue of UAS remote identification, David.
Yeah, the ADS-B specifications include a capability or option for encoding aircraft identification, call signs, November numbers. If ADS-B is adopted for beyond visual line of sight, it would solve the congressional remote identification concerns. And we've talked about that, that pretty much everybody's in agreement that you're going to need to have an ID number on a drone, whether you're flying commercially or flying for pleasure as a hobbyist, just because we need to know what's flying in the airspace. So there's another article. We'll have links to show notes from Southern Helicam, which is Tim's website. UAvionics and the potential for ADS-B for small UASs. So links to show notes. Thanks to Tim for that. And a shout out that I would like to thank Tim for the book that's arriving in the mail for me, as a note, because my photographs are in one of his new publications. So, but we've got one more thing. We were contacted by the American Bar Association, and no, Isaac, drinks will not be served at this seminar.
When you hear from the ABA, though, your initial reaction, yeah.
You pay attention because we're a little worrisome. But actually, there was a listener of the show who wanted us to let you know that there's going to be their first drone conference, which is going to be in Washington, D.C., next week on June the 5th, 2018. So it is kind of short notice. They apologize for that, but they thought we could at least get some people. So there'll be links to the show notes. It's AmericanBar.org, groups, air and space, and look up drone law on their website. So we're looking to hear some feedback from that. And one of our favorite people is going to be a presenter, which is Bill English from the National Transportation Safety Board. It's going to be one. So if you haven't heard Bill speak, he's a friend of the show and a good friend to both Max and I, but definitely it'll be a great presentation on how the National Transportation Safety Board is using drones for experimentation on what happens when there's an accident, as well as Bill has now implemented drones to be used as a tool by the National Transportation Safety Board when there's an accident, like train accidents or aircraft accidents, using their small UAVs for prepping the scene to get their information. So we thank the the American Bar Association for looking out for us, and hopefully they have a successful conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David, I think we should wrap this one up. We want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. As I mentioned, be sure to check out the show notes at the uavdigest.com/245, where we've got links to all the news articles we talk about, the companies, the papers, the reports. There's a lot of good information there, so take a look at that. And, of course, you can find us on social media as well.
You can find us on Twitter, at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theUAVDigest. You can become part of our Slack listener team, like Chris did, and get some inside information like that drone survey. And you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theUAVDigest.com. And Max or I will send you an invite, and you can become part of our super listeners join the conversation there. Lastly, if you'd like to buy some swag and advertise or show that you are a drone operator, you can do it through our Cafe Press store. And most of all, we'd love for you to leave us some feedback. And our feedback would be at Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.